ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Boxing Day, that is when this is landing in your feed. I hope you got everything you wanted from Christmas and then some. Our household, we gorged on sweet treats and ham. We had Chrissy-related music deluxe, Mariah Carey through to the Pogues. Now a little bonus present or presents plural for you. Our four biggest stories from a sports perspective in Australia for 2025. What will be number one? I know already. You're about to find out. I'm Patrick Stack. This is ABC Sport Daily. Number four, it's all about Jordan Mailata. The Super Bowl is about as big as it gets in terms of global sporting moments. It's as much cultural as it is sport. Taylor Swift was there cheering on her man, Travis Kelce, and the Kansas City Chiefs. Rapper Kendrick Lamar was dissing fellow musician Drake at the halftime show. I'ma do my stuff. Why you trolling like a, ain't you tired? Trying to strike a chord and it's probably A minor. The scale of the thing is overwhelming, and in the centre of that massive event was a massive man, the 207-centimetre, 166-kilo Australian Jordan Mailata, a one-time South Sydney Rabbitohs development player who quit his NRL aspirations to chase a career in the NFL. Drafted in the seventh round by Philly way back in 2018, and he fell in love with the game and it fell in love with him, hearing the offensive tackle cackle and banter while ironing out NFL opponents is just something else.
I was wondering what would break first, your spirit or your body?
The boy from Bankstown is charisma on steroids. Have a listen to the guy sing. Welcome to the When his Philly Eagles took down the Patrick Mahomes-led Travis Kelce-inspired Taylor Swift-supported Kansas City Chiefs, it was an enormous career moment, but also an enormous Australian sports moment, as he became the first Aussie to play in a Super Bowl victory.
For the second time, the Vince Lombardi Trophy is headed to Philadelphia. Eagles fly in Super Bowl 59.
How do you celebrate that? By serenading the 1 million Philly fans who turned out for the celebratory parade.
We are the champions, my friend. There we go, come on! We keep on fighting to the end.
Number three. When Adelaide Crows star Isaac Rankin used a homophobic slur late in the AFL season, it was clear this would be a story of enormous consequence. The AFL had a body of work suspending players in similar situations over the preceding 12 months. They had sought to stamp out the behaviour. From a pure football perspective, the Crows, premiership chances, they would be wounded by the absence of their talent. In an era of historical division, it's always going to be a big ask for the AFL to arrive at a finding that all parties agree on. So Andrew Dillon and his team got there, just maybe not in the way they would have hoped. The four-game suspension delivered for Rankin's homophobic slur achieved the unusual feat of seemingly upsetting everyone. While the Crows had lobbied for a less severe sanction, the broader industry felt the previous mandate was clear. This would surely carry a five-game ban.
Following an investigation and submissions from Adelaide and Isaac Rankin, including compelling medical submissions, Isaac has received a four-match sanction for using a homophobic slur towards a Collingwood opponent.
One problem was a lack of transparency around the process. In the five previous cases over the last two seasons, this opaque dance had repeatedly played out with no real understanding or explanation as to how these punishments are concocted. ABC lead AFL caller Corbin Middlemass made the case on ABC Sport Daily that we're now at the point where a public-facing matrix could be used to determine punishments in this space.
It feels like the AFL, by having whatever procedure they follow in-house rather than public-facing, gives them a little bit of wriggle room. You know, the kids love to say, you know, we keep it 100. Maybe the AFL just likes to keep it 90 to give themselves a little bit of flexibility on this front. I think if you did have a forward-facing program or matrix, for example, it would take some of the whataboutism out of it. It would give people the opportunity to be able to say, oh, well, this is what it is, and as a result, we know what's going to come next.
Corbin talked about this moment through a different frame of reference also, imploring us to consider it from a pure football context. If players slowly learned through suspensions that head-high contact would not be tolerated, for example, then doesn't this have a similar arc to follow. The AFL's had six cases across six clubs in two seasons, Perth to the Gold Coast, Sydney to St Kilda, and both sides of Adelaide. And I suspect every club assumes its players would not make a slur in the heat of battle. The Crows' management of the issue was also curious. They sent Rankin to a training camp in Rome before he finally addressed the media on his return. If he'd spoken sooner, you wonder how it might have shaped the conversation.
I am in no way a victim, but by going away has given me the space to reflect and educate myself to understand the weight of my mistake. And I'm fully committed to bettering myself in that area. In the next few days, I'll be standing in front of my teammates, the AFLW, and apologising to them personally, as they deserve this at the very least. From here, all I can do is put my head down, work hard, support my teammates in the best way I can, and show through my actions that I'm growing and learning from my mistake.
Adelaide's football season never really reached the promised heights in his absence. Out of the finals in straight sets. Number two, it is Ange Ball, mate. What's your favourite story in Greek mythology? Is it Icarus who flew too close to the sun? Was it Midas turning everything he touched to gold? For me, Big Ange, mate. The Greek-Australian who took basket case Tottenham to a European trophy. Postecoglou's second season with Spurs was a roller coaster. In the Premier League, they lurched from defeat to defeat, and yet they continued to stay alive in the Europa League. Ange reminded the UK press of his record on more than one occasion.
Absolutely, and I think I'll correct myself. I don't usually win things. I always win things in my second year.
And so he became something of a figure of derision until he did exactly what he promised and won a title in his second season, Tottenham's first trophy in 17 years.
Has it happened? It has happened!
We've done it, Rob, we've done it!
The wait for silverware is over!
Ange became the first Australian manager to win a European trophy. Aside from a handful of Argentines, he's the first person outside of Europe. No Brazilians, Japanese, Americans have achieved that feat. It's arguably the finest coaching achievement by any Australian on a global stage in any sport. His future remained uncertain, though you assumed he would earn another shot.
And I'll tell you something, I'll leave you with this. All the best television series, season 3 is better than season 2.
We'd never find out. He was cut loose by Tottenham boss Daniel Levy. There was an epilogue. Another Greek, Evangelos Marinakis, the colourful shipping magnate who also owns Nottingham Forest, he parachuted Postecoglou into that club just a handful of games into the season. Postecoglou knew the dynamic was fraught going in.
Well, we know you win a trophy in your second season.
I won a couple in my first as well. Celtic, I won a double in my first year, so.
So there you go. You're going to win one in your first time?
Yeah, yeah, well, of course I can, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, I might have to have a second year here, mate.
And so it proved. Ange lasted 8 games and 39 winless days, the shortest management tenure in the history of the league. A sharp contrast to the glories of just a few months prior. Number one, the biggest Ashes ever. A generational clash, a series to define careers. I know we say that stuff ahead of every Ashes, but coming into the summer of 25-26, it felt like we really meant it on this one. After all, this was off the back of a previous clash defined by a brilliantly divisive run-out slash stumping executed by Alex Carey on Johnny Bairstow. The flow on banter and content whet our appetite for nearly 2 years. England brought Bazball, the cricketing cult where losses can be restyled as wins, where the solution to most problems is feel-good vibes and go big cricket. This style, they argued, might save the format. This was a nation that had not won a test, let alone a series, since 2011 in Australia. And yet, coach Brendan McCullum and captain Ben Stokes were bullish about this group being different. The strategy was clear. Keep being bold with the bats. Stokes, Ben Duckett, Harry Brook, the cornerstones on that front, and airspeed with the ball. Jofra Archer and Mark Wood would be the two-pronged tip of the spear. When the English quicks skittled the Australians in Perth, there was a sense they had brought a plan that might work on these shores.
Carey waits. Stokes is in. Around the wicket, gives him the bumper and he steers it down towards deep third. He's berating himself because the catch is taken. He can't believe he's fallen for it. But he has offered the catch And he's also given Ben Stokes his fourth wicket. But it's Carey, the last of the recognised batters, and now Australia are eight down.
Cruising at 1 for 60-odd in the second dig, it was clear they could shift from fifth gear to, say, third. They could bat Australia out of the series opener, but the vibes and go-big attitude won out as they capitulated. Before Travis Head went trav ball with the bat.
Short ball, heads all over it, and it's going to be the same result. Pulls it for four. His fourth boundary in the over.
Stokes and McCullum were defiant in defeat.
Yeah, look, I've got complete trust in, you know, the players that we select to go out there with, you know, that mentality of, you know, being the person who's going to influence the game in the right way for us. And sometimes that doesn't always work out that way.
Having skipped a pink ball warm-up game to go straight to Brisbane, England wilted in the Queensland sun as Australia took control of the series. Mitchell Starc, immense with the bat and ball. England dropped catches in their bundle. A late head-to-head between Archer and Steve Smith, a case study in the erratic nature of England's performance. Firing when the test was gone.
Well, fast when there's nothing going on, champion.
Stokes seemed to turn on his teammates.
Just saying that teams who come to Australia can't be, you know, like, you know, soft or weak, whatever it may be, because that's how it is out here. It is a tough place to come, but you know, I see it as there's no room for that in a dressing room that I'm in charge of.
While McCullum bemoaned too much preparation and sent the team to Noosa ahead of the third test. One guess as to what happened next in Adelaide.
Holland goes in and he's with the edging and he's caught by Labuschagne. He's out. Caught by Labuschagne. His fourth catch. The game is over. Australia have won by 82 runs to retain the Ashes. Wow.
The Ashes wrapped up before Christmas. Baseball battered into irrelevance in 11 days of Test cricket. It's not often a team can beat not just the opposition, but also destroy a cricketing philosophy in the process. Not bad for a group branded by Stuart Broad as the worst Aussie side since 2011. That was our top story in the 20-1 countdown of the biggest Australian sports stories of 2025. Imagine what we might see in 2026. A Winter Olympics, FIFA World Cup, T20 World Cup, the Matildas playing a home Asian Cup. It's going to be a belting 12 months. Can't wait to cover it with you. I'm Patrick Stack. This is ABC Sport Daily, produced by Poppy Penny. Thanks to the NFL, Good Morning America, Fox Sports US, CBS, Sky Sports, Tottenham and the BBC, as well as Channel 7 for the extra audio used in this episode.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.